Good afternoon. Welcome to Technical Deficit, where we solve technical challenges with me and friends. Today, I'm very excited to have one of my very dear friends coming on with us. If you've been anywhere in the MSP world, you know we just did the CyberDrain Capture the Flag. This is, I want to say number three or four. I forget which one. Our guest will correct me when he comes on. But the Capture the Flag, we've talked about it before. We always do this right afterward. It's an amazing event where MSPs, technologists from all over the world, it's a truly global event, get to put their tests, their skills to the test, right? It's not enough to say, how many times have you been like, oh, the previous IT guy sucked. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's no good. Well, the CTF is exactly how you prove yourself. Make sure you're not all talk. So without much further ado, we'll bring on our guest host. Just want to do some quick housekeeping. As always, the chat's live. If you're watching on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, I have no idea where else we're at. What's up, Luke? Previous guest of Technical Deficit a couple times, actually, and CTF powerhouse. So chat along with us. We're going to be having fun. We're going to go over some of the more interesting challenges, not so much the most difficult, but the most interesting for sure. This is recorded, so if you don't get to watch the whole thing, don't feel bad. It's a service industry. If you have to go do some work, come back. I get it. We'll miss you, but we'll be around. But without much further ado, please help me welcome Mr. Kelvin Tehelar.
Holy crap, you almost pronounced my name correctly.
Almost. At this point, I'm just trying to not pronounce it correctly.
So. I mean, that was so close. I'm flabbergasted. It's wow.
Sometime between now and GeekCon, I may get it, you know, just so I can call you out in my session.
Yeah, exactly.
How you doing, my friend?
Good, good. How are you?
Oh, fantastic, dude. Fantastic. And I got to say, I love your neon sign in the back, the CyberDrain sign. It is.
I love it too, but it's a bit bright.
It's just like you. It's your Microsoft MVP 2 years in a row, right? It's 2 years at this point, right?
It's 2 years. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're Microsoft MVP. You host my blog, you know, cyberdrain.com. You have the CTFs that you do regularly. You have this whole SIP, the CIPP .app for Microsoft 365 administration. And I mean, and then you run this little Echo thing or this little MSP thing on the side. So is there anything you don't do, sir?
I also try to make my own. No. I cook a little. That's what I do. No.
That's no kidding. Exactly. I haven't seen a food pic in quite a while, but yeah, your food pics are no joke.
Yeah, so that's pretty much me. It's MSPs and food. Those are my specialities.
with a little automation mixed in the middle. Whatchamacallit. So for the people that may have not watched the previous CTF, technical deficit coverage of CTFs, they may have not participated in the CTF previously. Can you give us a quick rundown of what exactly the CTF is and how you came about doing these?
Yeah, so the description of the CTF is an event for all sysadmins, not just MSP sysadmins, but all sysadmins that want to prove their worth to themselves. It's not even prove their worth to the world, but it's like, I want to show everyone that I have the technical chops that I claim to have. So the event was actually started during COVID ages ago, which now really feels like ages ago, but it's only 3 years ago. And we started it mostly because we saw that a lot of people were suffering from, the best description is education exhaustion. You just didn't get the time to work on your education anymore due to COVID, due to being at home, due to having children around you all the time, or your spouse, or just the general stress of it all. So the event was really created to like, as a sort of method to catch up for everyone. And it grew into this bigger and bigger event. I mean, the first time we started the CyberDrain CTF, we had a maximum of, I think, 300 people. And this year we had a maximum of 1,000, and we had something like 890 registered players, somewhere around that. So it's been growing steadily. You're muted, Ray.
I'm muted. I'm always muted. Even with the first one with the 350 people, it was 350 registered, and you had to open that up, if I remember. Like, the cap was a little bit lower the first time, and you had to open it up, and you still had people that couldn't participate in the first one because there's only so many resources, only so many, and you were, you know, you were putting this all together in the beginning. I do want to recognize it's not just you. You always grab people from our communities that help judge these things, help come up with some of the challenges for you, or advise on the challenges. Is there anybody else you want to call out and give them recognition while we're on here?
So there's actually, like, the growth of the Cyberdrone CTF is mostly thanks to my fellow judges. And that is especially Gavin Stone, who joined the second CTF as a judge, and then Luke Whitelock, which joined the third time, as we try to have our winner join as a judge to sort of make sure that everyone gets equal chances, but also because the winners of the CTFs often also have the best stories. They have the best technical challenges they've experienced. Mm-hmm. So,
Let's Luke, be fair, taking Luke out of the running was probably safe for everybody. So,
yeah. Luke was one of my judges before, and this year we actually were joined by John Dupree, who was the winner of the last CTF and made some amazing challenges that we'll be talking about today, because most of the challenges make people somewhat frustrated. And John might have just built the most frustrating challenges in the world.
And that's awesome. I know you've picked Slagle's brain on some Linux stuff, and actually we have a surprise for you. We did bring on Gavin Stone to come say hello. Oh wait, that's not Gavin Stone. That's Miss Ashley Cooper. What's up, Ashley? How you doing?
I'm totally Gavin Stone.
Oh, yeah. Gavin, it's so good to see you.
I'm bloody chuffed to be here with you on your birthday, mate. But let's get to the crumb of the matter, shall we? Blimey, that was a good CTF. I'm sure everybody is totally knackered now. Your technical leadership really helped them rise to the occasion.
Oh, good Lord. I can't wait for your talk at GeekCon coming up May 21 through 23. Oh, and true story, I have that exact picture hanging on my wall of family and friends in the office. So what's up, Ashley? You came on for not Gavin Stone imitations, but you came on for a special message you wanted to share with us?
That was the special message that I wanted to share. Happy birthday, Kelvin.
Happy birthday, brother.
Also, it's, everyone that's also thanking me or wishing me a happy birthday in chat.
If that doesn't say anything, like Kelvin doesn't say, I want to take off on my birthday, I'm going to go play with my swan, I'm going to go. Yeah, and that's a real thing. If you don't know, talk to Kelvin about it.
One day we'll show some videos of me playing with my swan. It's not a euphemism.
But it's not a euphemism, but whatchamacallit. But you know, he said, No, I want to come do awesome stuff with MSP. So thank you so much, dude. Ash, thanks. We grabbed her just to say, come say happy birthday. We will see you later. Take care, Ashley.
Bye. Yeah.
So, all right. So you have badass MSPs, sysadmins, technologists helping you run the thing, judge the thing, create. Helping create some of the challenges, getting harder and harder. And if you want to see some of the insane challenges, go look at the previous technical deficits we've covered on the previous CTFs. There were some. It's fun to watch because I don't actually participate every year because we sponsor, so I don't participate because it'd be kind of unfair. Plus, that way I can tell myself I don't get my ass kicked. I can tell myself, you know, I would be great, but I'm going to step out of courtesy. But I love watching the chat in the SIP Discord of people just going nuts. And this year you had them they were looking for groups to help each other. That was a new thing, right?
Yeah, so this year is something where we introduced the MSP versus MSP showdown. So it wasn't just proving you're the best technical resource, it was proving I'm the best technical MSP in the world. So we have the winner, which is IQ in IT, which can call themselves the world champion of IT, pretty much. which is an amazing feat as an MSP.
That's amazing. And the prizes were bigger and better than ever. It was just, and all the vendors, you know, like I said, we sponsor, but all the vendors jump into genuinely, they want to participate. Huntress, Ninja, go look at Cyberdrain. It's ctf.cyberdrain.com. The site's still up. Go look. I mean, all the vendors, all the sponsors that participate are just genuinely supporting the community. And was this the first year you had Microsoft backing up the CTF?
No, we had Microsoft the previous 2 years because they say like, okay, hey, you know what? We'll sponsor the entire technical stack, which makes sure that we have like the Azure environments available, Azure credits available. We have an Office 365 tenant that everyone can log into. All of this stuff, which normally is a bit difficult to achieve, they just say, right, you know what? We'll take care of it and keep it in the state that you need it to be.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So without much further ado, I know we've been teasing everybody. And Alex Farling says, it sounds even dirtier in Kelvin's accent. So without much further ado, let's get into it. So the first one we're going to cover is the MSP showdown number 5. Can you give us a recap on what that is?
Okay, so the MSP showdown ones were really designed to be the hardest things in the world, like the most difficult things that you can be facing as an MSP or as a system administrator. And what we've done, what we've done this year was really like, we also gave you a specific time limit for the MSP versus MSP MSP challenge. You couldn't just say like, okay, you know what, I'm going to take 2 weeks to solve this one challenge. You had 48 hours to solve a challenge. So just like in real life, you had a client chasing you and you had people wanting to just, or you had people behind the issues that needed to be solved. So this year we had the MSP showdown challenges, and number 5 was one called, let me just check. Oh yes, it was a Windows 10 desktop of a user that kept losing calendar appointments. And this is actually a really great story because in my MSP, we suffered from this. We suffered so much that we almost lost a client due to this specific issue. One user, the secretary of generally the company, but mostly the CEO. So it was like she was an assistant slash receptionist slash secretary, but she kept losing the CEO's calendar appointments. They suddenly were either gone, they disappeared, or when she deleted them, they reappeared. So the CEO still thought he had to go somewhere, which was a terrible thing, of course. So
yeah, this was
an issue that lasted almost a month for us because it was so hard to troubleshoot.
And before we get into that, I think that's something we need to call out. Very many of the challenges actually come from real life stories. They're not just like, let's come up with something to be super difficult. It is because something happened. We went through this and now let's put other MSPs through the same paces.
Yeah, exactly. This is like almost all of the challenges have real life situations that happened. It's not all of them. For example, the breadcrumb challenges, which we'll get to later, are just more to challenge you technically. But these are all like actual tickets we've had. So this client, super upset, super angry, super everything pretty much. And they were about to leave us. We had a different company come in and audit how we set up Office 365. We had a different company come up with like, oh, these are the 50 things that it could be. No one offered a solution. Another MSP came in, checked the entire environment, said nothing's wrong with the configuration. And in the long run, it turned out to every time that the user deleted a calendar invite, she got a message that later on that the invite had been recreated by Exchange. So Microsoft got involved in this ticket and they were like, we don't see anything wrong with the mailbox. We have no clue what recreated by Exchange means. I had Microsoft third line engineers telling me like, we have no clue what's going on here. Like after a while, the client was about to leave us. They actually already signed the contract with the next MSP. One of my employees remoted into her computer and noticed that the tool that we use to remote into her computer was lagging. It was slow. And that's not something we're used to because the tool that we use is popularized because it is so fast, because it works instantly. And he was like, what the hell is going on here? I'm not used to this happening. So at that moment in time, he actually started the most basic of basic troubleshooting. He started pinging some servers and he noticed that there was packet loss. But we've done this before. We've done ping traces. We've done network traces. We've done all of this.
Yeah.
And suddenly he said, like, this machine has packet loss. This must be where this issue is coming from. And it turns out that what happened was the receptionist put her bag against the network socket, causing a bad connection. And only on some day she brought that bag. So only on some day she had the issue. And she actually had packet loss because of that. And Exchange has a freeway acknowledge system.
Right.
First, when you create a calendar appointment, it acknowledges that the thing has been created. Then when you edit it, which is you create the appointment and the name changes and edit, it sends another acknowledgement. And then the client says, okay, I've processed this, and sends that to the Exchange server. What happened was when she deleted the things, one of those things in the chain wasn't completed. So Exchange was like, oh, wait, something went wrong. That needs to be recreated, which is the most insane thing. So to simulate this, we had an actual tool installed in the Hyper-V virtual machine that simulated packet loss only on HTTPS traffic.
Wow.
So a lot of the people that started researching this issue, this was actually one of the last challenges we've had. We're like, holy crap, how the hell am I going to solve this? I'm seeing bad downloads. I'm seeing issues with internet connections. And this actually is one of the challenges where we didn't create a fake flag, but one of our users did. Because we already thought this challenge.
How does that work? How do the users get to create a fake flag?
Like, so what we normally do is we place red herrings everywhere, like a little thing that might look like a flag, but isn't really. And one of the users decided to take one of these red herrings from another challenge and then actually put it in a calendar invite. So everyone started thinking like, hey, wait, that's the flag. I have to enter that. And it was like, this challenge was difficult enough without people being sadistic to other players, but I had to laugh at this.
I mean, please tell me Lime Networks called the client and said, we figured out the problem, you needed a new purse. Please tell me that was the response.
We didn't give her a new purse, but we did make sure that this issue will never occur again.
So Ashley brings up a good point. You do these things for the improvement of the MSP community, not because you're like secretly a sadist and you're just laughing at everybody crying in the CTF chat on your Discord, right?
Yes.
That sounded very questionable. So I know we didn't have this plan, but who do you remember who took the top marks on this on Showdown number 5?
I think this was actually one of the users that accidentally started packet something like Wireshark or something because he had issues with his internet connection. Nice. He was like, oh, I'm just going to start a packet trace to make sure what's going on. And he saw the HTTPS packets being dropped like, wait a minute, that's not my machine. It's the VM. And he solved it like that.
See, like, this is one I think I could have done well, because like anybody who's worked with APIs or has worked with replicated systems understands that you get an accept, but there's still the confirmation stage. And that's the first thing that jumped out at me. See, I could have won the CTF. Oh,
you could have one challenge.
There you go. I could have absolutely completed one challenge. And if you give points like the SAT for putting in my name, would have been fine. All right. So MSP Showdown number 4. What was the challenge on this one?
This challenge was a virtual machine that failed to boot. Like, just it sounds as the simplest challenge in the world. Restore from backup, you're done. But the flag was set as the desktop background. So users had to boot the machine to be able to view it. Now, some of them actually cheated on this. Some of them realized from the challenge text, which was something like, the flag will be found when the machine has booted, figured out like, oh, it's the desktop background. So they started going into the registry, finding the background location and using the image. And that's okay too, because what we always say during these events is, there are more than one way to get to the flag. It doesn't matter if you think you cheated, as long as you've achieved the end result. But this challenge was actually introduced simply to teach people that sometimes the advice on the Microsoft forums actually works. Because the fix for this challenge was SFC Scan Now.
No, come
if
on.
If you would have performed the SSC scan now and rebooted the machine, you could have just grabbed the flag. It wouldn't have been done.
The number of, like, I can tell you, I've probably used Microsoft support, the Technica support, the big one, that's like 250 or 350 an incident. I've used it maybe three or four times in my life, and every single time that was their recommendation, and not a single time did it actually solve anything. So that is vicious, dude.
There were a couple of people that performed an SFC scan now, but didn't boot to safe mode after that. So that's one thing you always have to do after an SFC scan now, boot to safe
that's
mode.
That's what Tyler said. He says he tried it and it didn't work.
Probably because he didn't boot to safe mode right after that. That's the only thing. And so little system engineers or administrators actually use this because you know it doesn't have any effect. But all I did was I deleted a system 32 file that just prevented it from booting that would have been restored. So it's one of those little evil ones.
USB drive and it asks if you want to scan it, and you know it doesn't do a damn thing. But it's like, oh, let's repair it by scanning it. Like, that's vicious, dude.
We just figured, like, we need to make sure that everyone understands that it might be the last place you look. Because I know that some people actually started, like, opening the Windows folder side by side and copying the missing files by hand.
I mean, when in doubt, trial and error, right? Like, you know, figure it
out. Yeah, you know, so Adam just said in the chat, he just copied the missing folders from another working VM.
I mean, so, but that's kind of the point, right? Like, you know, for you and I, we're old dogs at this. We've been doing this a long time, and the experience brings a lot of benefit, but it also brings a lot of bad habits or things that, like, we just dismiss really easily because we've seen, let's be honest, we've seen so much shit, right? And so being able to go back and say, no, forget our biases, let's go back and try this, these basic steps, that's an important thing. Personally, yeah, I probably would have done the same thing. I would just copy and paste in the folder and see what happens.
It's the entire think horses, not zebras. Doctors are taught when they see something that is, like, super rare, don't think of the super rare thing. Think of horses, because that's what you'll encounter. There's no chance someone has a 1 in a billion disease. There's a bigger chance it's just the flu. So it's
think horses, not zebras. That's why I like talking to junior techs, right? They don't have that burden of experience. They just see it for what it is, right?
Exactly. It's also something I'll be speaking about during MSP GeekCon, the beginner's mindset. Sometimes you just need to drop your own biases and go back to what you think you know, and just make sure that you go into things with an open mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So does this one have a backstory?
This one is actually one of those I want to teach people a lesson once, but this hasn't really happened, because if in my MSP people would spend time on restoring a VM that way, I would just tell them, I would kindly suggest to them to restore backups. Let me put it that way.
Dude, that's yeah. So going back to the Kelvin is being sadistic thing. So, but you know what? There's a lesson learned, so we all should win. And since we mentioned it, and Ashley says, you know, the banner was super ready. MSP GeekCon May 21 through 23rd. The early bird discounts are available till the end of this month. Go to mspgeekcon.com to go get them. And Kelvin will be talking. Ashley will be talking. Adam, I believe, has a session. I have a session. It's going to be an amazing, amazing, amazing event. And there are going to be some of those MSP Geek admin type people there. Hopefully, Gavin Stone, not the picture, will be in person. So it's awesome. Go sign up right now for it. But all right. So, since I gave you zero advance notice on this, do you remember who took this one, top marks on this one?
I think it was actually Adam that did this one.
Oh, that's
Adam
why actually, he's,
so that's so why he's so, all so the chat. Adam Wilford is the first place winner of the CTF MSP versus MSP showdown. He took the 7th place in the normal leaderboards, but he was actually the one pushing on these MSP challenges like crazy. He was super fast on a lot of the challenges, and the ones that he wasn't fast on, he made sure to solve perfectly, which is, Adam has a fantastic technical mind.
So, Adam, if you know you're ever looking for work, but like, no, like seriously speaking though, like how cool when you're interviewing, because you're a business owner like I am, when you're interviewing employees, like one of the first questions I ask, or candidates, one of the first questions I ask is, what was the last thing you did independently to go learn or further your knowledge of your chosen profession, right? Because it's easy to say my work sent me to this, but like when you're saying, okay, well, I went and I tried to do this code by, you know, code by example or whatever, that's a big deal. No, 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 don't let Aaron know, please. I just talked to him this morning. Whatchamacallit. But like to be able to say, oh no, I did the CTF, I've done it the last year or so, and you know, I placed here. That's a big deal because it shows you're practicing your craft. And as an employer, that really matters. And even if Adam's not looking for future employment, you know, other MSPs that participated, you other 850 something MSPs that participated, it's a nice resume item, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So while Adam's ratting me out with the Roost people, let's go over to breadcrumbs. What are these breadcrumbs?
So the breadcrumb challenges are more a challenge of the mind, like how far do you go to troubleshoot an issue? And in the previous year, the breadcrumb challenges were simply sending you around to a bunch of websites. It was pretty much you go from the Cyberdrain blog to the Gavin Stone blog to the Luke Whitelock blog, and we had some like difficulties in each of these steps. Like for one, you had to check an SPF record. For the other one, you had to check an image or copy and paste something. So that was something we've done last year. This year we wanted to make them a little bit more DevOps-y. Because that's okay. A skill in a lot of MSPs that's still missing. The entire DevOps category was a new category we introduced this year to teach people more about how to use the standard DevOps toolkit, which is GitHub or Git in general, which is accessing specific APIs in specific ways. It's more in depth than just the standard system administration knowledge. It's also one of the most played categories this year. Like most people focused on the DevOps category, which was super nice to see because it's a skill that is underdeveloped in most MSPs.
So I want to pick your brain on that because this is something I've railed on for years. I've always said maturing or more mature MSPs need to have DevOps talent in-house. Like these are not, it's like a security person or team, there's certain an account manager. These are certain roles that need to be, and I think DevOps is definitely one of them. Of course, the Roost guy is going to say he loved the DevOps category, but still, you know, can you talk, because I'm now a shady vendor. So, but you're an MSP. Can you talk to how DevOps play for the? Because a lot of MSPs say I don't really need anybody yet. I don't need to, you know, bring anybody. How does it play in your MSP? How do you see that? Like, how does that provide value to you guys?
Yeah, so I always want to preface this with, as an MSP, Lab Networks is an outlier. Lab Networks is an outlier both in size and in ways of working. We've adopted automation as a culture 12 years ago. And adopting automation as a culture makes sure that the company grows in a very different manner than a standard MSP. I have 30 FTE that are focused on automation. And they are still system engineers. They are still working tickets. They are still working projects. But their focus is how do I automate whatever I'm doing with these tickets, whatever I'm doing with these projects, whatever I'm doing with these technical challenges. So I want to preface with that we are an outlier as a company. We're not your regular MSP. But I do know that a lot of MSPs struggle with automation in general. And that is not with, oh, they struggle to create PowerShell scripts or they struggle to use automation tools. No, they struggle with the mindset that belongs to automation. How do you go from a wildly chaotic process to one that is streamlined enough to automate it? That is something that I've spoken about at length recently at Ride of Boom at the Roost Pre-Day. I spoke about this and tried to explain to people that the only way you can do this is by starting small. You have to start picking your battles and making sure that you start automating the processes that you do completely understand, the one that you are in control over. Start with those and you'll slowly move people towards wanting to automate more. So DevOps in MSPs is a challenge, not because of our tooling, not because of our knowledge, but because of the mindset that most MSPs have. They want to solve a problem and they want to be done with it.
So I want to pick your brain on this real quick, because you know me, I'm the documentation guy. I'm all on documentation and process. And to me as an engineer, it all starts with discovery, becomes the documentation, becomes the basis, the checklist for building the automation. Like that, if you have strong documentation, it's very easy to say, these are the things, what pieces do I need? Now automate it, because that's going to be the process going forward. And because we've pushed all of our staff to be so documentation first, if I can butcher the language a little bit, but they know we live off the documentation, we create the documentation. When it needs to be edited, we edit the documentation, but it's always up to date. But do you find that the MSPs that struggle with DevOps are also struggling with documentation? It's that scattered brained lack of process that's the causes of all this?
Living in the fire. They don't step out of it for a moment to look at, okay, they just go from one small fire to the next one, not understanding that their entire house is on fire as long as they don't start focusing on the process. They thrive in the chaos, because a lot of MSPs simply just push through it by pure will and perseverance. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing living in that chaos constantly.
And that's, they get burned out. You know what I mean? It's the easiest. And that's, you know, that's actually what I'm talking about at GeekCon. It's how to embrace your passion while avoiding the burnout. Because we love technology, but the burnout really comes from doing the same thing over and over and over again. How many times can you reset, you know, a password? How many times can you replace a cyan cartridge so you can print in black? Like these, you get what I'm saying, right? Like there's only so many times you can do this. And the better MSPs are saying, well, I'm tired of doing this. Let me just automate this, right? Let me allow password self-reset. Let me allow for them to do whatever needs to be done. It's not hard. Look at your tickets, see the tickets that are coming in, just like you did with the challenges. Look at your history, see what comes up most, and start with that, and then work from there. And you can always do better. But there you go. There's Steven. One thing I learned from numerous industries that when asking for help, always provide steps you've taken already. Yeah. It's so much better than it's broken. Please fix.
It's broken. Please fix. That's the best ticket description in the world, right?
Also, I'm too busy to work on this right now, but I need it done yesterday. That absolutely. Yeah. We've all been there. All right. So breadcrumbs, finding images. What were some of the other things again?
So breadcrumbs, we actually had two this time, and the entire CTF this time was Star Wars themed. So this breadcrumb challenge was there were two steps. First, it was breadcrumbs, attack of the scones. Attack of the scones. Come on, these puns are brilliant.
I love it. Yeah.
Actually, I didn't come up with the puns. John Dupree's wife, she came up with a bunch of them for us, and they were all equally as brilliant. Nice. So breadcrumb attack of the scones was created by Luke Whitelock, and Luke came up with the brilliant idea to upload a different version to the PowerShell gallery of a script than his GitHub account. So when you looked in the PowerShell gallery, you saw one thing, and when you looked in the GitHub account, you saw another thing. And a lot of people assume that those two are always the same thing. They're not. Anyone can upload malicious code to the PowerShell gallery and not upload it to the version that is on GitHub. So it's so important for you to audit this code. So what we did is we, in one of the versions, we actually hid the flag. We just put it in plain text in one of the versions on the PowerShell gallery. And we didn't put that in the GitHub version. So people were struggling to find that because they didn't understand that that code could be different. This one also had, I think Luke created about 50 or 60 red herrings. And there were people that actually entered every single red herring on the CTF website.
So you're telling me they're not checking hashes before downloading files? Is that really what I'm hearing?
Yes, that is what you're hearing.
MSPs do better. I'm just saying, MSPs do better, please. Better.
Absolutely. So that was one of the breadcrumb challenges. The other one was more advanced and more complex. The Bakery Strikes Back was a challenge where you needed some GitHub knowledge. You needed some Well, am I correct in this? Yes. You needed some GitHub knowledge. You needed some SPF knowledge. It was a sort of encompassing challenge where you had to take a lot of steps to get to the point where you need to be. Eventually, you needed to go to GitHub, enter your name in a Base64 format in a GitHub pull request.
Okay.
After creating that, you'd get added to a list and you'd get the flag. A lot of people failed this simply because they didn't understand GitHub or Git yet. And it took a lot of time before people started getting into that. And you see that in the statistics of the last 2 weeks. Like in the first week, this challenge was available. Almost no one solved it. Like two or three people solved it. And then eventually it started going up, up and up in a very high pace. And yeah, the people are right. That was a different challenge. We also had the Stormtrooper sign-up sheet, which was a different challenge.
I love that it was Star Wars themed. Does that mean the next CTF will be Firefly themed?
I cannot confirm nor deny anything.
Like a leaf on the wind.
I recently received the best birthday gift I've ever had, which is a Firefly card deck. It's amazing. Yeah, it's
I have that.
Quite possibly. I think game. I showed it to you on during Ride of Boom.
It's
cool amazing. It's very dear to me.
That's awesome. All right. So any more breadcrumbs you want to cover, or those are the two?
No, I think that's it. The thing is that a lot of these breadcrumb challenges were made to make you think in a different way than you do with your normal MSP stuff. And again, these false flags are there simply to actually lead you astray and make you go back to the beginning.
Nice. So, all right. So we have two left. We have hacker and environment. That's a scary one. Okay, we just came from Ride of Boom, right? Where like every time you turned, Wes or you or John Strand or Chris Lair, somebody was telling you like it's all going to shit. You're hacked already. You just don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah. We don't even say the B word anymore. Like we're scared of like that. And you're like, yeah, hold my beer. I'm gonna make it worse. So a hacker the environment, what is this?
So this was a challenge, which again, one of the real life experiences. And this was a painful one for one of our co-managed clients. This client, they had all security services in place. They had everything in place. They have a pretty good IT department. They recently received an investment from this large firm that makes sure that they're able to continue what they're doing, because they're doing beautiful work. But they had one key piece of the puzzle missing. They allowed users to consent to applications in Office 365. It was the only thing they were missing. They had such a good security posture. And what happened one day is that a user fell for a phishing email, but it wasn't your standard enter your username and password email. It was adding the enterprise application to the tenant, making sure that the hackers were able to use the enterprise application to access mailboxes, not a username and password. It's called, it's mostly known as OAuth hijacking or OAuth hacking, where the application actually has access to it. The funny thing is that this was actually done in such a way that it became confusing even for my internal security specialists. I have a team of security specialists which are certified hackers. They have their CSIP, they do pen tests, they actually have this Dutch legal certification where they're allowed to access stuff like plain text password files and these bigger, for example, the collection. That which is a well-known password dump. You're officially not allowed to have that, as it's in a lot of places it's illegal. They have a license to do this. They have a sort of detective license, as it's called in the Netherlands. These guys were confused at what was going on, and that is because these hackers were actually doing something smart. They, at the moment that they added the enterprise application, at the same time they generated an app registration. And the app registration had so many obvious red flags that everyone thought, this must be the issue. Someone created an app registration and this must be the problem. So they deleted the app registration, and a week later they had access again. Because the app registration was so obvious, but the enterprise application that they created, which was the actual initial entry point, was so well hidden and so well crafted that no one understood that it was actually malicious. And even if you looked at the logbooks, it looked so normal because these guys took months before they started their attack. So everything looked like absolutely normal, but suddenly this enterprise or this application registration was created and they started using that. So that was an example of everyone knows these app registrations can be super dangerous, but if you have a very sophisticated attacker, they'll lie in wait long enough for your logs to run out. They'll lie in wait long enough for you to not see what they have been doing. And they'll lie in wait long enough and create things that you wouldn't expect them to create first. So enterprise registration first, using the API from the enterprise registration, create an app registration, use the app registration to access mailboxes. A brilliant method that is super confusing to most system administrators, but even to most security teams, such as mine and a big security team here in the Netherlands that started getting involved in it. You're on mute again.
It's all right. Nothing I say is that interesting. No, that is wild. So let me ask you something. Okay, so given the, and maybe we're going a little off course here, but given your team's knowledge around security and their, obviously, like you said, you're not your typical MSP. You're going so much more in depth. The only way to find this stuff, to find the actual point of incursion would be logs. But absolutely. Are you generally keeping, because to do this, I mean, this lie in wait thing, we see that from Huntress. We see that from others all the time. Black Hill is talking about it all the time, where they're just lying in wait for the best opportunity to do it. So are you now keeping logs 12 months, 24 months, 36 months? Because
we actually kept logs for 36 months. And we have a tool that just has, I have to say it correctly, we have a tool that saves logs for 36 months and makes them ingestible, searchable, that kind of stuff. But we didn't think to look at it because we thought we found a solution. And that's the thing, that's the danger there. You thought you were done. You had where it was coming from, but actually we didn't.
I mean, if only Microsoft, you know, disabled app consent by default.
Well, you can use SIP for that. It's one of the beautiful things about CIPP or SIP. You can just enable the standard and you're done.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. Even for the stuff Microsoft doesn't like to keep applied, SIP is definitely one of those tools. And go check it out, CIPP.app. I can't imagine anybody watching this doesn't already know about it, but you know. All right, let's go to the last one. The last one I like because GraphQL, you know, I always say I'm not a programmer. I'm a code along kind of guy. I've done thousands of projects over my lifetime. GraphQL is a little bit different of an animal. Describe what it is first before we get into this challenge for those that may not have heard of
GraphQL. The best way to describe GraphQL is an evolution of your standard REST APIs. It is a way to ingest data from an API. That's the easiest description, but it's also a lot more complex than a REST API. Instead of just saying, hey, here's the URL, give me what I want, you actually have to start specifying, give me this specific data. You have to create a query to actually return data. And that is what I wanted to show people, because a lot of people in the MSP world now understand, how do I ingest a REST API? They understand the basics of a REST API, because a lot of our tools as MSPs, a lot of our tools simply use REST APIs these days.
It's question number one when most MSPs are reviewing a vendor. Do you have a REST API? Even if they never use it, but we see it every day. And that's one of the qualifiers. So yeah, I get it.
We're starting to move. Well, MSPs are behind the enterprise industry by about 5 or 10 years, always. It's a given. And that is because either tools are not accessible to us or methods of implementation haven't happened to us yet. And GraphQL is actually already very big in a lot of products. I mean, if you look at MSP products even, the GraphQL API for DataORMM, a big RMM, their actual new interface is completely GraphQL based. It's not REST based. And you see that in a lot more things. Roost, if you look at the Roost API, it's also a GraphQL API. It's simply an evolution, and that is something that we have to be careful for as MSPs. We all are still holding on to that REST API, and like you said, we're still asking everyone, How does the REST API look? Do you have REST API available? But these days, the GraphQL API part is also starting to become more important. It's a completely different way of ingesting data. It's a completely different way of approaching APIs. So MSPs will have to start learning this to not get caught up by the times. I mean, there are still vendors using SOAP APIs these days, which is
I was going to ask if you were going to mention that.
I'm not going to name names, but they still exist. So we have to make sure that as MSPs, we're prepared for the future. And that's the reason we created this challenge. This challenge actually was a two-part challenge where in one, you had an old REST API, and you first had to ingest that REST API, which, like I said, most people got that instantly. But then they had to use the information from the REST API to connect to the GraphQL API and simply make a small mutation instead of a query. And that was complex for a lot of people. Thankfully, there's a lot of tools. Insomnia is one, but also, I forgot the name for it, but most GraphQL... Most GraphQL APIs actually have like a URL directly to it where you can see the schema and you can start diving into it. And that's what I wanted to achieve with this challenge. It's people dive into how a GraphQL API works. And some people made it very difficult for themselves. I remember that one of the people in the chat said, oh, I'm going to use PowerShell for this entire challenge. And PowerShell is not perfectly suitable to work with GraphQL APIs. Everything is possible in PowerShell. I'm the first one that's going to say that. But it's more complex than using any other tool that was prepared for this, sort of like Insomnia or like the other tool of which I can't
because
find the name.
PowerShell is a language is very much akin to REST APIs, where you're going after a certain thing and getting a certain expected response, and then you manipulate the format however you want, right? GraphQL is a different animal. You're saying, I want the data in this way. Give it to me.
Yeah.
And it gives you, you know what I mean? So you have to have forethought of what you're expecting. It's a whole different dynamic, which I've never seen anybody ingest GraphQL into PowerShell. That'll be a technical deficit one day.
Exactly. That is a more complex challenge than just performing this challenge inside of the CTF.
All right, so Insomnia, and you want to describe what Insomnia is for most people? I'll find the link and I'll put it in the chat for anybody.
Insomnia is the easiest description is it's an API ingestion tool that helps you with GraphQL APIs, REST APIs, kind of like Postman, but more advanced, allowing you to easily write queries, but also check like what does this API actually have available? Like, what is the schema? What are my options? Can I send a mutation, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, and the we'll put it up on the screen for anybody that didn't, or anybody that watches this after the fact. Maybe Adam can go learn GraphQL a little bit. It's insomnia.rest. So were there any surprises? Because every CTF we've done, you've come back with something you weren't expecting. Were there any surprises here?
Absolutely. I expected people to not get very specific challenges. And this year, actually, one of my wishes came true this year. Every CTF in the first couple of days, we actually had a defined winner. And a lot of time it was Luke Whitelock. He just took that first place because he just pounded through the CTF, wanting to finish all the challenges and getting the maximum score.
24 hours or some nonsense, right? Like it was some quick.
It was really quick. And this year was the first year where it took a week and a half until it actually had a defined winner. And I believe that the first place didn't even have the perfect score. I'm not entirely sure. He might have had the perfect score, but it was very good to see that this year we've balanced the difficulty challenges well enough to have each level be able to enter the CTF. Another surprise that I didn't expect was how fast people started working on the Azure side of challenges. We had like five Azure challenges, and those were actually the first ones that were getting hit and people creating scripts, creating a chatbot, making sure that the storage account became accessible again. It's nice to see, because last year the Azure challenges were always left until the end because people just didn't have enough experience or didn't want to do them. And this year you're seeing a very clear move towards the cloud challenges first and the rest of the challenges later.
That's awesome. All right, my friend, we're at the top of the hour. I want to be respectful of your time. I'm sure you have, please tell me you're doing something fun on your birthday. You're not just working.
I am going to cook, I think, okay. Which is fun for me.
I'll be looking for the pictures. And please tell Anastasia I say hello and miss her very much. Thank you, my friend, for coming on. I appreciate you. Go check out CIPP.app. Go check out the CIPP Discord, ctf.cyberdrain.com. And if you like my blogs on PowerShell, go check out cyberdrain.com too. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing you at MSP GeekCon in May, less than 74 days away in Orlando. All right, my friend. Simon, what do we got coming up, dude?
Yeah, so we have several events for next week. We have the Tech Bar Podcast, episode 54. This will be our St. Patrick's Day special with Emilio Garcia of Tier 2 Technologies. We're also going to be having a partner first webinar with John Harden of Avic on March 22nd at 1 p.m. And then remember, Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, catch up with the latest industry news on MSP Dispatch presented by the MSP Media.
Awesome. And that's all she wrote, ladies and gentlemen, for Technical Deficit. Thank you so much to all that participated, regardless of where you placed, whether you were Luke or whether you're an Adam or a Mr. Dupree or anybody else. Even if you tried and failed, it doesn't matter. I know you learned something, and that's the real benefit of something like this. So if you enjoyed it, hit us up in the comments. Go meet us on the SIP Discord or MSP Geek or MRU or Reddit or MSP or any of the other 50 billion places Mr. Tehelar is around. So thank you so much, everybody. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.